How about why? Why? Who? Who? Why? Why?
What?
It's a line from an experimental show that I did when I was in college.
Okay. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shoup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. Today's episode is episode number 20.
Oh.
Whoa, episode number 20. And it is entitled Experimental Theater.
Yes.
Blackout.
Blackout. There we go.
Okay.
Glad you could join us for this, our 20th episode. We aren't going to have a big drunken celebration this time. We may hold that for our 25th, possibly, but glad you could join us. We are joined today by Mr. Rick Ellis, who is a colleague of ours, who was also very active in the South Bend Civic Theater in South Bend, Indiana, and is here to talk to us today about experimental theater, which is something that at our home theater, which is Elkhart Civic, doesn't do much experimental theater, but they do in South Bend, and Rick has experience with this, and so welcome, Rick.
Thanks.
We're really glad to have someone else here.
We need somebody else to talk to because we get really bored with each other.
Yeah, we do.
And we should say most recently with the acting,
with the
actors
acting
ensemble in South Bend, who also does and used to do and now currently still does kind of experimental work.
Sure, absolutely.
And whose first resurgence production was amazing. That Tiernan Affair was wonderful.
Well, thank you.
It was excellent, and I hope to see many, many more.
Cool.
One of the things that I think we should start off with when we talk about experimental theater is say, like our title says, what is it?
Yeah, that's a good question. Keep the questions coming.
And I hope you have the answer.
I'll try to answer. Early in the 20th century, playwrights and theater designers predominantly took over to alter the audience's experience or bring the audience into the experience. That's when we started to get more theater designs such as the thrust or the traverse stage, where you break down that fourth wall and bring the audience into the production. While the phrase experimental theater encompasses a great variety of formats, its main objective was to make the audience think and participate in the production itself. Oftentimes, it was even used in political fairs where governments wanted to motivate the audiences into thinking a certain way. Propaganda or agitation was used at that time. Somebody else jump in here.
Evoke a response, correct?
Yeah.
To evoke a response
or a thought,
even if it was just to make the audience think about a certain thing.
Correct.
Right.
What would you call an experimental play that you've seen recently or done recently?
I think
what I was thrown off by was getting the audience to maybe participate. I never thought that audience participation was particularly a necessary part of experimental theater.
And it's not.
Okay, because I've sat through Crap's Last Tape and Waiting for Godot and No Exit, and I never once felt the urge to jump up and become a part of it.
No,
but I think that is one way of explaining experimental theater.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, it encompasses a variety of formats, but you could even consider improvisational theater as experimental theater.
Okay.
Murder mysteries are part of experimental theater. It's not only getting the audience involved, but sometimes it's going off script, where you don't have a conventional script, you make off script and bring the audience into the story and have them as part of the story. There's a show in Chicago that played for many years, may still be running, where the ending changed depending on the audience's vote of how they wanted the ending to change.
January 12th. is one like that, where the audience is the jury.
You're talking about Sheer Madness?
Sheer Madness.
Sheer Madness. That was
well,
fun.
It's the same kind of thing. And, yeah. And they, whatever the audience votes, that's who the murderer is, or they're guilty or something.
But, right. Now, that's an extreme version of experimental theater, but it's where you're physically getting the audience involved. But also, initially it began as getting the audience involved mentally, or trying to shape socioeconomic patterns or thought patterns or political patterns.
Is experimental theater typically, spare sets, black box, that kind of stuff?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
It encompasses a tremendous variety. It's just if you are able to motivate your audience in a certain way, whether it's a certain way of thinking or actually going to the physical, it could be like Sheer Madness is what seems like a conventional production. You've got a set, you've got a script, and although that script may alter throughout the course of the evening, depending on the audience, all of it, for all intents and purposes, appears to be a traditional scripted play.
All right. So I'm confusing black box. It's kind of a separate genre than... I mean, black box really refers to the facility as more than anything else.
Although most people use, I think, their black box theaters, if they have one, to do more experimental work.
More experimental work, or particularly if you've got a unit set where you've got multiple locations, it's easier to use a black space, mm-hmm.
Right.
A clear space to use.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our theater isn't really equipped, at least at this point in our history, I guess, doesn't do a lot of experimental theater. Why do it? Why should community theater become involved in something like that?
I guess it's just a preference, it's like, why do Greek over Shakespeare?
I guess my thought would be that maybe, some of your more experienced actors or people who are maybe more into the art of it as opposed to maybe the more social aspects of community theater that be more interested in delving deeper into something a little bit more, I don't know, just a little more meat to it, I guess.
I definitely find that one of the benefits is the creative process as an actor. Yes, especially if it's something you can either get off script with, or if you're really pushing the envelope with an audience, to delve into that area where you're bringing the audience to question something that they might believe to be different, where you may be attempting to alter the audience's opinion about something. And I certainly do find that type of theater more satisfying than traditional comedies or tragedies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm thinking of, and I never thought of it as an experimental play, and it's totally different from the movie, but when I saw the play, Doubt,
mm-hmm.
okay, you go through, it's totally scripted, but then, and I can't remember if you did it in South Bend or what, but at the end in New York, the priest comes out and he asks the audience, how many of you believe the nun, how many of you believe the priest, and how many of you doubt?
Right.
So they had to kind of go back and think, oh, wow, who do I believe in this? I mean, it was a full production, but still you had to think along with it rather than physically
absolutely.
Getting involved.
And it's also one type of performance that falls into experimental theater is something that is non-mainstream. I mean, the production itself became popular and it was mainstream, but it was a topic that few people really wanted to talk about.
Right.
And when you push a subject like that, then it does sort of fall into experimental theater. There's been a lot of traditional scripted plays that would have fallen into that same category, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. The big question, mm-hmm. do they get together at the end? That's a very open-ended product.
I always thought they did. Come on.
No.
Who likes a happy ending there?
I guess it depends on the director.
I guess.
But Virginia Woolf, what happens to them at the end?
Oh.
Albie considered himself absurdist. He felt he was a student of Beckett, but many of his work was, a lot of his work was very open-ended. And that kind of pushes the audience to start thinking about things that they don't really want the light shown on. And I would consider that experimental theater as well.
Okay. Yeah. I understand that better now.
But do you find that experimental theater has a place on the majority of community theater stages?
You'll find, especially in these economic times, you've got to cater to your audiences. People, 90% of the people want song and dance. And that's all they really want.
They want a happy ending and they want to laugh.
And closure, mm-hmm. it is human nature to want closure.
Right.
And so I think that, is it important to have Shakespeare on community stages? I don't know. Is it important to have Greek? I personally think so. I think everybody should have, at least one true classic, whether it's Shakespeare or Greek or whatever. I think that it should be at least one on every season.
Okay, my question is then, is that with the eye to having your audience become more familiar with this type of a play?
I still don't know that they'll gain an appreciation for it.
Okay, then my follow-up to that is, is it good to do it if you can't do it well?
Well, yeah.
Because
that's
I've
a whole,
seen
that's a whole,
some...
I think that's no, a whole other podcast.
No, I've seen some Shakespeare that I thought, oh my Lord. Yeah. And, and I'm sure that anybody who'd never been to a Shakespearean production would just never go back.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of unfortunate. So... I don't know.
Well, there are all sorts of limitations that theaters will have. But to me, why can't a theater be everything to everyone? If you're going to put a Aristophanes or Shakespeare on a season, that's really, to me, that's more for the actor than it is for the audience.
Right.
And I think it's important to nurture your actors in that way as well, even if it means saying, okay, look, we need to hire someone who is very adept at this style of theater to come in and train our actors to do it and do it as well as possible. Maybe even taking that extra step to nurture your actors in that way. But, I mean... where's that money going to come from? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the
push today is to sell everybody a season ticket, you have to make sure that the 6 or 7 or 12, however many shows you're putting up, are something that the majority of people would say, well, there's a dozen, but I'd like 10 of them, so I'll go for the reduced rate and get the whole package,
sure. Sure. It's catch 22.
It's terribly hard. Terribly hard.
Well, we did a whole show on the whole, the unknown play problem, or the one that, mm-hmm. I've never seen that before.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah. So you're just always fighting that.
When I was in school, in college, we had to study a lot of what I would consider experimental works, Beckett or Ionesco, or even the earlier works that are now considered classics, like Tennessee Williams or Eugene O'Neill. Some of those, especially Beckett, I always felt like, okay, I can study these in class, but I don't want to see this on stage. And I think sometimes when we're looking at creating a season, that's where my brain goes sometimes. It's like, okay, interesting play. I don't want to see it on stage. How do you think that that's the right thinking process, though? Do you know what I mean?
I'm just going to tell you, you're thinking all wrong, John.
I feel bad because it's like, I feel like I should really love these things. And yet, I remember sitting through somebody's senior recital, and it was dark on stage, and the girl was in a rocking chair with her mouth painted bright red, and there was an angel in the background lifting her arms to the sky. And it was like, I don't get it.
Well,
you know,
remember it.
I remember it, but I don't get it.
And maybe that's what you need to ask then. Is it, as I was saying, is it for the audience or is it for the actors? I'm sure there are still a lot of actors out there who would enjoy doing Sophocles or mm-hmm. Phaedo. They did a recent production of Flea in Her Ear. And I was excited about that because it still needs to be seen. It still needs to be done. You may not want to see it, but maybe then... you need to consider, if we don't want to put it on because there's not an audience for it, maybe we could do a workshop and have the actors pay $10, that could go toward hiring an instructor mm-hmm. who's professional to come in and teach. And then you give a final performance, like a student recital. You give a final performance, and whoever wants to come, it's, you know, $2 or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's a work. It comes
That's
out
a good
of a
idea.
Workshop.
That's a yeah. really
it
good
still
idea.
Should be there so that either an audience or actors can be exposed to
so
it.
It's part of the education function of community theater,
ongoing.
Basically.
Yeah.
At least that, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, you're going to have people who come to every production in your season, but really only want to see the musicals, and mm-hmm. they would never, you know, pay $2 to come see The Frogs, you know, really, or anything.
Maybe if they did it in a swimming pool like they did in Chicago, maybe they would come.
And I guess, and part
or
of my,
Mary Zimmerman rewrote it.
Right.
She would, yeah, I go definitely then. But you know, I guess I kind of draw a line though between the classics. Like for me, Aristophanes why the name isn't coming to me right now, but any of the Greeks, mm-hmm. or
Sophocles, Aristotle,
and Shakespeare, those to me are classics in my head, which I think truly do, but some of this experimental stuff that what we're talking about,
right.
Some of that's really, really out there. So, but I think I like your idea about the fact that maybe you need to hire somebody that comes in and to teach that workshop, or because we know it's not going to go in our season. I there's no way I could do
sure.
some of those. We did Mrozek in college, and I think Mrozek is great, but he sure isn't for my audience at the Opera House. But
right.
maybe to come in and teach the history of that, and then to possibly do some work from the show, or to do the show as a stage reading,
right.
is not a bad idea. Yeah, and that because it does help to foster that.
Brecht.
It's
where do you see Brecht around here?
Well, you don't.
You don't.
But you,
I'm
it
waiting
should
for,
be.
I'm well, waiting for him, and I'm waiting for him, many. And I wait, and I wait, Joan, and I wait for him, and I never see him anywhere.
Oh, very funny. Some places do Threepenny.
Wait for Beckett.
You know. Oh, you guys. Yeah. All right. Very funny.
No, I one of my favorite Bertolt Brecht's is... the irresistible rise of Arturo Uy. Mm-hmm. Nobody does it.
Right.
It's a great show.
Really? I don't think I ever read that.
Great show. But again, it's kind of experimental and nobody does it.
Well, I've seen I've seen Threepenny a lot. Because mm-hmm. I think that it's a musical, so people are... Oh, sorry, I'm clonking. You know, are more apt to go and see that. Mm-hmm. But...
We were talking about getting an audience for things that are experimental or classics or things that are, you know, quote unquote out there. Mm-hmm. How do you get? Is it a problem getting actors who want to get involved in that? We have we have always had kind of a contingent of people at our theater that do not. That ought to do non-musicals because they can learn more about acting in them, and yet refuse to do anything except musicals because that's what they like, and yet we have that issue. It would seem to me that you might have something of the same issue trying to get enough people that want to do something that's really off the wall or what we say out there, different, unusual.
Yeah, you're going to run into that problem wherever you go. I mean, there are actors who come out of the woodwork for musicals, and it's
some
and,
should and stay yet, in the woodwork.
Well,
that's
David,
but
I was just going to say that. Actually,
just burrow their little heads right back in there.
Back in.
No. Again, you know, if do you have an audience for it? Do your actors want it? I mean, that's the same.
Well,
thing.
If your actors don't want it, you know, I guess I you really don't have much choice. But what do you say to an actor to say, "Hey, look, you know, how do you, you should participate in this? We're going to be doing Sophocles, and you know, it's going to be kind of an experimental production. Please be part of it. And if they're reluctant, what's the pitch? I mean, what do you say? You know, you're going to learn something, or you need to learn something, or you know, what do you do there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I can't say that I do either because it has to come from the actor. The actor has to want to be able to expand, and you have to. If you explain to them the nature of experimental theater and say, look, this is not just about getting up in front of an audience and performing. This is about getting up and moving an audience. You've got this story to tell, and part of this story is going to be something that your audience may not necessarily believe. Of course, you can get that out of Wicked, you know, I mean, that's right. Something like that. But this is something that you want to push out into the minds of your audience and to help them either understand or help them begin to question their own beliefs or push them somewhere where they don't really want to go. And, I mean, that's part of helping others to understand the human state. I mean, how do we... It's almost what we do in every story we
right,
tell.
Right, yeah.
You know, helping to understand the human condition is an altered, our comedy, tragedy, everything we do.
Well, it's
is
all altered consciousness when you're in that room watching in that big room with a bunch of other people watching a performance.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's entering a different
except
different
place. It's not singing how much I love this this girl, the girl next door, or whatever. It's saying, you know, why does mendacity create alcoholism? You know. Really, I mean, it's shining right, the light on. Well, I'm thinking, you know, or Virginia Woolf. I mean, those were. You shine the light on something that people are embarrassed by, but it forces them to think about.
Right.
You hope.
You hope. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, many times people kind of going.
So from that standpoint, death of a salesman is experimental theater in a sense.
To a degree, absolutely.
Because because of the huge themes that are in there.
And there was a push too, I think, in the mid-60s where we went into more of a modern. Well, there was, I guess, an attempt to go postmodern, but sticking with that naturalism or the realism that theater turned over early in the 20th century, keeping the light on, as I said, the human condition, whether it's comical or tragical. It's shining the light, and a lot of playwrights did dabble in that.
Mm-hmm.
So. Okay, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, but that's part of the fun, or part of it's kind of maybe not so much part, not the fun, but the adventure of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's supposed to be an adventure, I think. Anyway, well, that's all the time we have today for this episode of Theater Geeks. Folks, please be sure to stop by the Theater Geeks website and go to the Theater Geeks store at www.theatergeeks.com/store. Buy your Theater Geeks hat, mug, bibs. Childhood.
Do we have bibs now?
Do we have bibs? I don't know. We have hats, mugs, cups. Pipes in on this. Caps, all that kind of stuff is all in there for your enjoyment. We'd also like to thank today's honorary geek, Mr. Rick Ellis, for joining us today.
Thank you.
And he's a real geek, actually, thanks for joining us. I am Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.